This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet down, didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
Welcome to the podcast. Hello, I'm your host as always, Shane Told. This is Lead Singer Syndrome, a show where I talk to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. Oh, did you miss me? Did you miss me? Because I know it was a bit of a break between, you know, the special episode with Spencer of Under Oath on Friday. Now it's Wednesday. We're talking about almost 2 weeks here. So maybe there's a little bit of withdrawal amongst my sinners, which is okay, because today we have a great episode. Ben from Billy Talent is here. And this is a guy I've wanted to get on the show for a very, very long time. Not just because I'm a huge fan of their work, huge supporter of the band and everything they've done. They literally grew up 15 minutes from where I grew up. And, you know, they're a generation older. So really wanted to get his take on everything from what his influences are, what he thought about the Toronto scene back in the day, and their road to somewhat unlikely success. It is a beautiful thing. Thank you, Ben, for taking the time. And thank you, the listener, for being here with me and Ben this week. Before we jump into that, how about those Blue Jays? 11-5. I went to a doubleheader yesterday. It was the third doubleheader, I believe, in Blue Jays history. We play in a dome in Toronto, which a lot of people don't know, because we have horrible weather. And yes, it's snowing in Toronto right now, and in the middle of April, which is kind of unheard of. So I had tickets to the game, and the game got, well, I can't call it rained out, but a huge chunk of ice fell off the CN Tower. That's the big space needle we have in downtown Toronto. And it actually broke through the roof of the Sky Dome, the Rogers Center, it's called now. We refer to it as the Sky Dome in this podcast. And yeah, they had to cancel the game because they were scared people were going to get hit by huge pieces of falling ice. So a doubleheader yesterday, I watched about 7 hours of baseball. The Blue Jays won both games, 11-5, baby. I am stoked. Any other sports fans in the house? Didn't think so. Well, we got one with Ben today, but we don't talk too much about sports, just a little bit of Maple Leafs talk. 2-1 in the Leafs series, and how about those Raptors? 2-0 against the lowly Washington Wizards. That's going to come back to bite me, I know it. But that's right, April in the T is here. No longer April in the D, I'm afraid. Sorry, Detroit. But as I record this, I am about to get on a plane to head over to Europe with my band Silverstein. We are doing Empiricon Festival and a couple sideshows, and I know we have some listeners in Germany, in Europe. I know you guys are hearing this right now, so make sure you grab tickets for Empiricon. We're playing, Comeback Kid is playing, Heaven Shall Burn is doing some of the shows. It's a big, huge thing, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So come over and see us, and if you see me, you know, walking around and stuff, feel free to come up, say hi. I love meeting people, especially fans of the podcast. As I mentioned earlier, some of you might be going through lead singer syndrome withdrawal. That's okay, perfectly normal. However, I have an option for you. If one episode a week just isn't enough, we have the All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, you get access to bonus episodes, interaction with other fans of the show, interaction with me. I do a question and answer session every month. You can get merchandise shipped to your house every 3 months for free, access to other Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. And of course, it is what helps keep this show growing and going week after week, keeping the lights on. And believe me, without that All Access Club and your interest, and thank you to all my sinners worldwide, we would not be able to keep this show going to what is it, 125 episodes, I think we're at? Crazy, crazy stuff. It is awesome. And I want to thank all of the supporters. The link to check it out, all I ask is you check it out. LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access. There's different tiers, but $6 gets you in the door. What is $6 a month? That's like pennies a day. So check it out again, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Also, great friend of the show, rockabilia.com. It's still snowing in Toronto, but I'm sure it's tank top weather down south. Maybe you need a new tank top for the season. Maybe a t-shirt. Maybe you're still rocking a hoodie. I don't know. But whatever you need, if you need band merch, rockabilia.com, they got it. They have over 500,000 unique items, stuff you can't get anywhere else. You have not seen this stuff before. And it's all officially licensed from the artist, so there's no knockoffs, there's no crappy quality offset print. You wash it once, it fades away. You don't have to worry about that with rockabilia.com. And of course, best of all, promo code PCJabberJaw. Enter that in, J-A-B-B-E-R-J-A-W, PCJabberJaw. Enter that in and save 15% off your entire order at rockabilia.com. All right, I'm going back to watch Luke Maley highlights, but you stick around and listen to this episode of Lead Singer Syndrome with my good friend, Ben Kowalowitz of Billy Talent.
What you say is what you get!
Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hey, Shane, how's it going?
Dude, never better.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, great to have you, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm also doing quite well. I just finishing folding my laundry.
Oh, that sounds like a terrific little Saturday morning you're having.
Saturday morning should be, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I just was looking at your Twitter feed, and I saw that you were at that Leafs game in Tampa. What a fucking heartbreaker that was. Huh?
Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, the first two periods were amazing. And, you know, we're me and my buds, we're all kind of sitting there quite cocky.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, yeah.
The game's my fault. I'm going to take this one because I was sitting at a bar and I look over at my girlfriend and I go, man, I really like the way the Leafs are playing. Just, you know, they're playing the best team in the league, you know, in the division. They're I really like the way they're skating. And then they come out in the third period and I'm like, I did this. This was me.
Yeah.
I jinxed this game. So I'm sorry about that.
We felt it all the way in Tampa. So thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, it must have been nice to get down to Florida. And I know you saw some Jays games and that's a nice little trip.
Yeah. It's something, my pals and I, we've started last year. Well, I'm an avid golfer.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible golfer, but I love the sport, very much so.
Everyone's a terrible golfer.
You know what? That's exactly true.
Yeah.
That's exactly true. But, so we all went down. I had my best friend come in from Australia. And, so there was a lot of golfing, Jay's game and the Leafs game. So yeah, it was a kind of the ultimate sports week. but which is sometimes, you know, it's nice to kind of turn the old mind off sometimes and just go enjoy the simple things in life.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I'd say as a band, you guys take a fair amount of time off. I mean, I was looking
That's
at
funny.
Like, I mean, am I wrong? I mean, when was the last time you played a show? It's been a while.
Last time I played a show was I think it was Reading and Leeds.
So like
end
August,
of August,
maybe. Yeah,
yeah, but you know, we also it's a valid point and assumption to make, but I will say, you know, we worked on the record for about a year and a half.
Yeah,
there was a lot of kind of turmoil, which I can dive into now, or we can wait till later. But
give me the turmoil. Give it to me.
Well, just with like Aaron, our our drummer, beloved drummer, and my best friend. You know, finally came to the realization that his MS was not permitting him to play drums anymore.
Yeah.
And so we had to, all of us, the four of us, kind of sit back and go like, "Well, what are we going to do here?" And so we were all kind of the mindset of like, you know, just stopping and waiting until he is better. And unfortunately with that ailment, you can't, it's very erratic and unpredictable.
Yeah, very unpredictable. Yeah.
And so, we decided with Aaron's blessing that we were going to record the record. So we asked our friend Jordan Hastings, who is an Alexis on Fire, to come play on the record. And then we were hoping that Aaron was going to be feeling better by the time the tour would start. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And so Jordan kind of came out. So, yeah, there was just a lot of stuff around the recording of the record, a lot of time that was it was really hard on all of us. Obviously, you know, for Aaron especially.
No, I mean, I know Aaron very well, and he's one of the nicest guys in the world.
He certainly is. Yeah,
and, you
he
know,
certainly
you frequently,
is.
You frequently call him your best friend, you know, all the time. And you know, I know I saw you guys play at the ACC, whatever it was, about a year ago. And, mm-hmm. You know, and he came and he played a couple songs with you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, like, you know, you look at Billy Talent and you look at a picture of the band and you say, oh, are they a five-piece now? And it's like, oh, no, they have, you know, Aaron and Jordan are both in the promo photo. So that's kind of like it's a cool decision to make. And obviously you guys, like the four of you guys, have been playing music together for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It almost wouldn't be Billy Talent if Aaron wasn't involved, at least in some capacity.
Well,
is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate.
Yeah.
And you know, he is still as integral a part of this band as he ever was.
Right.
And you know, we're working on something right now, which I can't really discuss, but
that's cool.
He's going to become this, we're working on this cool thing that he's going to kind of be the face of in conjunction with the band. So that's something that we're really excited about launching this summer. And so going back to your point though, about taking time off. So we then, you know, we worked and recorded and, you know, finished writing and then recorded the record. And then we toured for 18 months.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got back. And so then it was like 2.5 years of just kind of nonstop. So yes, as much as it looks on, on paper that we're not really doing anything, but we've, you know, we needed to just kind of cool our jets and we're not, you know, the spring chickens that we once were.
That's
as a 42-year-old man, you need to kind of recoup a little bit. So, so we're actually started writing and hanging out and rehearsing kind of, I guess about 3 weeks ago. And so we're going to keep on writing, and then we're going to go do a whole bunch of songs, shows in the summer, and then write hopefully back in the studio come September. So
Okay. So you are pretty busy after all.
Because
if I was a super fan of your band, well, which mm-hmm. I kind of am, but that's beside the point. I mean, it's like waiting 3 years for a record, four years for a record. It's like,
that's
oh my
kind of
God.
The way we work. We've always just been like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we believe in the philosophy that good food takes a long time to make, you know,
sure.
And sometimes you got to wait and be patient. I also think that in this day and age, you know, there's just so much constantly being thrown at people that to kind of, it's a bit crass and a bit gross to always be jumping up and down begging for people to look at you. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to go away and come back with something that you're proud about, you know?
No, you guys have done a pretty good job of that, I think, you know, of picking your spots and doing the things that I think matter and not just doing things that are, you know, superfluous for, you know, just to mm-hmm. be there. You know what I mean?
Well,
I think it's really good.
I appreciate that. I mean, this summer is going to be our 25th year together playing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So so we don't really have them. And you know what it's like, you're in a band. So it's like, bands have their own, it's a living organism, you know, within itself. And it has all these nuances and subtleties that, and I think that once you start overthinking those things and instead of like trying to control or manipulate how that thing grows, you just have to kind of sit back and just let it be, you know? And that's kind of something we realized in the band. It's like, yes, we're all very different people. But the band, we just kind of, we operate the way we want to operate and we kind of do the things that we want to do. And is it right or wrong? We don't know, but that's just kind of how we operate. You know, we believe in putting out the best stuff that we can and sometimes just kind of, you know, not always having to be in shoved down people's throats and faces.
Right. Well, I mean, you've done a great job. You've had a lot of longevity. I mean, you talk about 25 years
mm-hmm.
and of course, you know, As I'm recording this, I'm in Oakville, Ontario right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we grew up like
kind of around
a 15-minute drive away, maybe.
Yeah, literally,
you know,
yeah.
From Streetsville. So I was, you know, familiar with Pez and you know, the early name of Billy Talent, if you will. And I actually have a really funny story that I don't think I've ever told you about, told you before. So I was in a band. I was also in Silverstein at the time, but we mm-hmm. were, you know, a local band in, you know how it is, you're in like five fucking bands. But I was in this band called, we were called The Livid. And okay. based out of Streetsville.
Really?
And, yes, yes. And we had a demo deal with Atlantic Records, the LA office.
Okay.
So they were paying for us to make demos and stuff, and they did, and we made some all right stuff.
Yeah.
And they came down to watch us rehearse, like play in our practice space. Uh-huh. It was Kevin Williamson and Tom Storms.
Oh wow. Holy fuck, isn't that crazy?
Oh, wait for it.
Yeah.
So we're playing in our practice space.
Oh, I know where this story is going, and fucking hilarious.
Yes,
yeah, we keep going. Yeah.
And you know, it's always so funny when you do these kinds of things. Like, we're playing, it probably sounds like shit. And
yeah,
they're like rocking out like this is the best music they've ever heard, you know? It's kind of embarrassing. But then, you know, we finish playing, we're chatting, and I don't remember if it was Kevin or Tom says, "Have you guys heard of Billy Talent?" And we go, Pez, yeah, they changed their we know them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think of the band? And we're like, oh, yeah, they're pretty good. Like, yeah, we just like last night we like someone said called us and said, hey, come like check this band out, and we were like blown away. And we're like, yeah, okay, cool. Then, to make a long story short, well, they signed you and didn't sign us.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, it worked out for me okay. My other
it
band
did work out,
you know,
quite well.
Did all right, but it was a really funny story and one I don't think I've ever mentioned.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, no, that was a crazy time for us. Because we at that point, you know, we were just slugging it out, playing whenever we could and opening for bands and playing at, you know, new music nights at the Horseshoe and, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of just trying to figure, just fighting the good fight, you know? And we ended up meeting this wonderful woman by the name, I was working at The Edge as like a promo guy. So
okay,
I was like handing out the tickets and stuff like that. And I mean, I could talk to you about for 6 hours about this, but anyway.
Yeah.
She ended up coming.
A radio station in Toronto for people that don't.
Yeah.
Know.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And I met this wonderful woman by the name of Jen Hurst, who was a junior A&R agent for Warner Brothers. And she was like, "Oh, aren't you in a band?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "We're playing at the 360. You know, you should come down and check us out." So she came down and checked us out, and then she was kind of the one that started the whole kind of snowball of madness that ensued, and. In a good way. And then, yeah. So then I remember like different managers and people started hearing that people were kind of checking us out. And, there was, a fellow by the name of, oh my God, Matt Hoffman.
I think Matt Hoffman's the BMX guy, but you never know. It could be the same name.
Yeah. But he ended up passing away, but he was, he came to see us cause he was working for SRO, which is a management company in Canada here, like managed like Rush and things like that.
Yeah.
So he was kind of, you know, wanted to see the band, and he came to our rehearsal space and was like, "Hold on a second." And he went outside and he called Tom Storms and Kevin Williamson and said, "You have to get up and come right now to come see this band." And they were in the hotel in bed. And I guess they had just come seeing you guys.
Yeah,
or
that's
something.
The thing. They literally, that's what happened. And then they came back the next day to watch us play again and talk to us or whatever.
Oh, okay, well, there you go.
Funny.
That's so weird. And literally, it was just because this guy was called them and said, "You got to come here right now." And we're like, "What?" It was like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And we're like, "No one's going to." He's like, "Yeah, trust me." And then, you know, next thing you know, we had two A&R dudes from Atlantic, U.S., come in and check us out.
They
were like, "Hey, what's up?"
They just came to see us. They flew, you know, just to see us. And then somehow along the way found you guys.
Isn't
and here we are.
Yeah? It is fascinating.
And you know what's crazy though too is you mentioned, you know, you're fighting the good fight and you're, you know, you're trying to make it work.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was like 20 or 21
we were 27.
Right. which I know like doesn't seem like a big deal maybe to people kind of outside the industry or something, but that's very old to be, you know, to get your first, you know, kick at
well,
the can.
Well, yeah. I mean, and we, like I said, you know, we started in 93 and, you know, up until that point, this was 2000 and I guess it's 2001 going on to 2002, somewhere around there, you know, and no one, you know, we did everything by ourselves. We had no one help us, no one do anything. And, you know, and we cut our teeth. And then all of a sudden we just had someone kind of, you know, believe in us or see something in us. And then it all kind of changed, but that's a very strange, almost serendipitous kind of thing, you know, that and we're both still here to talk about it, which is cool. Yeah.
No, and I love
super
it.
Cool.
I love it. And you know, I always thought it was interesting, you know, how you guys have had extreme amounts of success in Canada, obviously, Europe, the UK, Australia, you know, pretty much the entire world, but the United States, the country that signed you.
Yeah.
You know, you got signed directly to Atlanta. It wasn't, sorry, Atlantic. It wasn't like you were a Canadian band with an upstream deal or some bullshit. It was a legitimate record deal to a U.S. label.
Yeah.
Yet somehow, the territory that signed you somehow
signing with the,
wasn't
the
one.
Devil.
I guess, right?
Yeah.
It's isn't, like, I mean, you've had an amazing career of so many albums. And I mean, this isn't something that I would maybe have asked you about on album number two.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on with the U.S. Ben? But, you know, you've had some time to reflect and look back and think about it and kind of say, what the fuck? What happened?
Well, I'm still saying that.
Right,
And it's something, you know, well, I guess it's kind of the plight of the Canadian band. You know, we always, we've always been led to believe that having success in America was like the golden carrot that was dangled in front of your, you know, and it was like, ooh, and you're kind of chasing it, and you're chasing it, and you're chasing it. And eventually we, you know, we kind of, we have a very strong and loyal fan base in the U.S., albeit at a smaller level.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things where when we signed with the U.S. and, you know, again, we had never had any interaction with labels. We were a completely self-funded independent band for almost a decade. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, an iconic label being like, we want to sign you. And you're like, what? How? What? Like, how is this even possible? You know, like, it was just, it was so far out of the realm of possibility to us. And then it happened, you know? And so we were kind of just strapped to the front of a rocket ship and we're just trying to go on the flight. We had no manager. Like, we had no, there was no one giving us advice. Thank God, Chris Taylor, who's a very respected entertainment lawyer, was kind enough to kind of navigate us through so we didn't completely fuck ourselves. And then we were stumbling through the streets of New York, drunk as skunks, going like, does this happen? Did we just, you know? So then over time and over a consecutive, a lot of the people that we met were great people that were really passionate about the band and cared about music, or at least they were great actors, but you know, and then all of a sudden, like they all got fired, you know, and like the industry changed and the rug got pulled out from underneath these people, and literally that was the beginning of the demise of the music industry, you know, because it was, you know, all the big fat cats were finally being, you know, they were just it was not a sustainable, you know, operating system. And so a lot of good people also lost their jobs. And, you know, so we were then the next record, we're standing in a room with a bunch of people we've never met before who don't care about us, who, you know, they want to push the new Sean Paul record, you know, and we're like, okay. And then the next record, everyone else is gone now. So even those people, you know what I mean? So it just kind of became this weird kind of thing that we never really got to, we never really had the chance to develop and work on relationships with people and you know, and also, you know, maybe we were just a little, you know, the joke in our band is like we're 10% too weird for the States, you know, just we're just a little, something just doesn't connect, and that's fine too, you know, but it is strange.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. And then from the other side of the coin, you know, the golden carrot, I mean, Silverstein, we've done very well in the US, and we've always struggled in Canada. You know what I mean? For us, it's always been the opposite.
And that's why I was so proud of you guys when I saw, you know how big the crowds were and a lot of the momentum that was behind you guys there, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Again, you know, there's no rhyme or reason
to it. Exactly. That's the words I was going
to
use.
Yeah, we just have to be fortunate and appreciative that there are people that give a shit about us, regardless of where they live in the world.
No,
it's pretty special, you know.
It's just such a head scratcher.
Well, but isn't it just the Canadian way? Like you go through all of the history, like the hip. They never, you know, they're national treasures here in Canada, and they never had that big, you know, that big American single where, like, you know, it was just, there's just a lot of bands that have always, I don't know, there's just something about us that doesn't connect fully in America, which is very strange.
My theory, though, is typically not that it's something to do with something not connecting musically or personality-wise or whatever. I think it's almost always like an industry thing where, you know, like, I don't even want to bring up fucking Headley anymore. But, you know, like a band like that that's like big in Canada, no one knows who the fuck they are in the U.S. because they signed to a Canadian label and the guy was on a TV show in Canada. So that's why that only worked there.
Yeah, you know? I guess.
But then a band like you guys signing
point.
To the U.S. or someone like Simple Plan who signed directly to the U.S.
And some signed with Island.
Sum 41, exactly. Yeah. So those kinds of bands, they've all had success in the U.S. So it makes sense in that way. But I'm just at a loss sometimes when I think about this and it being your band. I mean, you don't fucking know either. So
no, we have no idea. Yeah. And I guess and that's the best part is we've kind of just, you know, I think we maybe have made some decisions in our past that were maybe a little bit US centric, like, okay, we're gonna focus on this, we're gonna try to do this. I think maybe other things suffered, but then we also realized that, you know, the world's a big place and we love spending time in Europe. And I love going to Germany and Austria and Switzerland and Hungary and Poland and Russia and South Africa and Australia and Japan. And, you know, like you're kind of Finland and Sweden and Denmark. And you're just kind of like, and you're going like, holy fuck, this is a beautiful planet. And there's so many wonderful people. And we just decided that instead of just touring America round and around and around, which we did for a long time, we just decided that we were just going to focus our attention on Europe and Canada and the UK and kind of just develop things there and see what would happen. You know, it wasn't necessarily like a calculated, like looking over a risk board, you know what I mean? But it was like, it's like we just kind of went where people were gravitating towards us.
You know, it's natural to do that.
Made sense.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, and so we've been really, really lucky and fortunate.
One of my favorite moments was when you guys came and you did a few days on Warped Tour. I think this is like maybe 2013, because we were there. And I remember you were on the one main stage, and the band after you guys was Bring Me the Horizon.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, what they've done is insane. But at this point, they were still real big. And they had to have this sea of kids, you know, waiting for them to go on, like, which tends to happen on Warped Tour.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, a smaller crowd. And I remember you saying, I remember I saw like Ollie Sykes and some of those guys like on stage watching you. And you say to the crowd, hey, you motherfuckers waiting for Bring Me the Horizon. You know where they are? They're on stage watching us. Do you remember that? And I just love that. And then, you know, it just made me think about what you just said. That the world is such a big place, and like we're in fucking, I don't know, Jacksonville, Florida, and like they don't get it, and whatever, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's also, you know, you also got to keep in mind, like, we came out at a time, like the band, like when we first, like there was still much music, you know, and there was still there was still multiple rock stations across Canada that were, you know, that everyone was kind of drinking from the same well at that time, you know, like everyone watched much music. Everyone listened to this radio station. Everyone read these magazines, you know what I mean? And so we just kind of exploded onto, like, now we're on TV every 10 minutes, you know? So we were kind of one of those bands that had, we had like that old school kind of machine. We were part of that. And then all of a sudden that door closed and then there was no more much music and they didn't play videos anymore. And rock stations were collapsing all around us. And, you know, so we were fortunate that we were, you know, we got blasted out into all these people that maybe would never have heard of us before. Right. And my point to that is like, so we've had the privilege, I guess, of maintaining a career because people kind of remember us from back in the day. As where, like, kids nowadays who have no point of reference of who we are, we're going to play in a place like Jacksonville, Florida on a, you know, 3 o'clock in an afternoon on a scorching hot Tuesday. And kids, they don't know us. They've never heard of us.
Sure.
There's no way, you know, there's no infrastructure built that people right. can go like, oh yeah. Or maybe it's like, my older brother used to listen to those guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I love that kind of stuff now too. But it's we were fortunate.
I love that when people say that to you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Billy Talent. Oh, I used to love you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, you used to, but you still do, right?
Yeah, we're still doing it. You know, but that's also the thing is that people, you know, they equate you with the time, and mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we're really fortunate that we are still making fans. You know, that yeah. when we go play, we have the first, you know, X amount of rows are all like young people, and it's so inspiring to us that. You know, we have guys now coming up to us, you know, being like, I'm a fan and I used to go see, and now I'm bringing my kids to come see you play.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that to me is like, that's just so badass.
It is so cool.
Yeah.
It is so cool. Well, you know, you talk about the mainstream stuff, you know, the much music and the radio, but in some ways you guys were lumped in, you know, with the, you know, quote unquote scene, you toured dates, you toured with Alexis Sunfire earlier in your career.
Yeah. Of course.
But I mean, you know, you say, oh God, like I always felt like you guys didn't feel like you belonged at all.
Well, cause we never like, you got to keep in mind is like, we grew up at a time where, you know, like we were teenagers in like 92, 93, 94, all of like the Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Rage Against Machine, Tool, Green Day, like all of like Oasis, like it was fucking just a tidal wave. And we grew up, we were the most, you know, at the most influential age. And that's, we're just like, we want to do that. You know, but we also loved Nirvana as much as we loved Tribe Called Quest. You know what I mean? And we loved Tribe just as much as we loved, you know, going to see Tool. You know, it's like, so we had all of this, like we just played music because we liked music. It didn't matter. We were never so categorically put into, we are this, we right. are that, you know? So that was our influences. Like we love Faith No More just as much as we love Led Zeppelin, or we love the Police just as much as we love the Buzzcocks. You know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
we were never part of a scene. Like we would play, you know, with punk bands, we play with ska bands, we play with like bar bands, rock bands, hip hop acts. We would just play wherever there was a stage, we would play. So then all of a sudden when we kind of came out in like the, you know, in the world's eyes, not just playing in front of
our
friends.
Exactly, yes.
They were kind of like, well, you are this. And we're like, well, what is that? What's the fuck is, you know, we're not screamo. We're not
right.
emo. We're not pop punk. We're a fucking rock and roll band, you know, that we can throw down in a couple different ways. And so, yeah, we kind of got put into a big pot that we were never necessarily comfortable with. But we kind of, you know, what can you do?
But in some ways, I think it was beneficial. Because if you looked at this like mainstream, you know, corporate rock band, that's, and then all that goes away. Like all, like you said, all those doors close. They're not playing videos on Much Music or made a real impact with your music. In some ways, people looked at it as, you know, like in the same vein as something like Alexis on Fire or, you know, a scene band, because vocally you were very different.
Yeah.
You guys still had aggressiveness to your music, and you still had, you know, your music was different, and like, you know, you bring up all these bands, but like when I heard your band, I heard At the Drive-In.
Yeah, well, you know? A lot of people,
and
did.
That's
yeah.
not
well,
a that's not a really ago. Like a mainstream band at all. Like they're, you know,
well, this is the thing, dude, is we didn't really have any idea what we were doing. We always, and to this day, write what we like. And that's where we were at that time in our lives.
Yeah.
Was, you know, songs like Lion and Sinker and Trionacy and How It Goes, like these big kind of like crazy songs. But our motivation wasn't necessarily coming from like a scene. It was just coming from being influenced and being open-minded and having your heart and your mind open and listening to things and being like, oh, you don't know why you're doing it, but you just have to do it because it feels right, you know? And that's something that I guess we've always respected everybody and wherever they want to hang their hat or align themselves with, we've always just kind of been very respectful of all of it, you know? Like, I don't care if you're in a punk rock band or if you're in a screamo band or if you're in a hardcore band. It's just, you know, if you're good people and you're doing it for the right motivations, then how can I fault you or have an opinion on it? Just be a good dude. You know?
Well, yeah. I want to ask you about your voice. Very unique voice.
It's one way of wording it.
Well, it's true.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I kind of wonder, you know, you bring up, God, the influences you just rhymed off, you know, a couple minutes ago, you know, Buzzcocks, Led Zeppelin, The Police. I mean,
love The Police.
I love The Police too. Where did you find your voice? Was there influences from these bands to sing like the way you do and scream and yell the way you do? Or was that just something that you're just, this is me letting it rip?
You know what? That's a really good question, and I've never really thought about it. I guess, you know, I was a drummer. So let's just, I played drums originally in our first band. It was me, Johnny, and a couple other guys. And I got kicked off the drums for this guy named Aaron because he was far superior to me. And I was completely devastated because I had just moved from Milton to Mississauga, and I didn't really know anybody, and I met these guys, and I was excited to, you know, be in a band, and I was a very, you know, below average drummer, which I still am. but yeah, so I got kicked off. So I kind of, and then I was so upset because I was, you know, I wanted to play music, and then I got a call from the singer, this guy named Trevor Bowman, who I'm sure you might be familiar with, and he's like, "Hey, you know, maybe you can come and sing some like backup kind of stuff or do some harmony kind of shit." I'm like, "Okay." Because I just wanted to be in a band so bad. I didn't care what I had to do. I never sang before. I had no idea. So I went and I got a microphone from Radio Shack. And Johnny had like a little Fender Rad amp.
Yeah, I remember the Rad amp.
Yeah. And at that time, you know, everyone, because you're a kid, everything's at fucking 14 on your amp. And everyone's just playing as loud as they can. So I would actually have to put the Fender Rad like on my shoulder with this little Radio Shack, but just so I could hear myself.
Of course, you know? Yeah.
Just so I could have a fighting chance. So I really had no idea what my singing voice sounded like or what it was or what I could do, you know? And I know for a fact that my favorite singers now in hindsight are like, I love, absolutely love Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction. They're one of my favorite bands in the whole world. Yeah. Freddie Mercury, just because he's the best, maybe, of all time.
I agree.
And like Mike Patton and, you know, these kind of people that were very alien almost, you know, like they never really
fit in.
That's
a great word for it. Flamboyant, definitely left of center. Like
androgynous these kind of, you know. And so I kind of got really attracted to that type of singing, you know. When I first started, I was always trying to sound like everybody else. And I was trying to sound like Ben covering Scott Weiland, you know, Ben covering Layne Staley from Alice in Chains, Ben covering, you know, Eddie Vedder is my favorite singer of all time. I will just say that. And person, he is just my idol and someone that I look up to with tremendous respect.
Hell yeah.
So it was kind of me portraying these caricatures, you know, and eventually I was just like, fuck, I can't do that. And it sounds terrible. So eventually I just kind of succumbed to just finding my own voice and being okay with that. And, you know, it was hard because I, you know, especially in the beginning years, you know, because I think the band, like Ian and Johnny and Aaron, you know, they're such amazing advanced musicians, especially when we were younger, that I was trying to keep up with these guys, you know what I mean? And I just tried not to embarrass myself or embarrass them, you know? It was a very strange thing when people would be like, "Oh, the band's good, but the singer, eesh," you know, because I wasn't everyone's cup of tea, and I was angry and I was screaming a lot, and I was, you know, I was this little like fucking flamethrower, you know, and I just wanted to burn everything down. And then over time, and I can say this to you and feel confident. It's like I've really worked on singing. Like I've really worked on, and I guess that's a testament to Ian's songwriting as well, is because he's given me a vessel to kind of challenge myself and push myself to not just be this one-dimensional kind of character and to kind of look I guess it's about painting with different colors, you know, and realizing that you don't just need to always paint in red with exclamation marks, you know, like there can be subtleties and there can be nuances, and figuring out where your voice can go and trying to push it further, but then also realizing when you've pushed it too far.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's something I've been really working on. Yeah.
No, and it's, I mean, I think with every record, you do get different elements and different, you know, vibes totally. So I get it. I think that in some ways your voice is not mainstream. You know, I mean, maybe Perry Farrell's voice isn't very mainstream either.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a huge band. But were you surprised that, first of all, that a record label like Atlantic Records wanted to sign you? And,
yeah.
And second of all these radio stations want to play your music?
Oh, my God. It was insane, dude.
I love your band and I always have. But there'll be times when I'll hear a song on the radio, River Below or something, you know, a song like that. It's a huge hit. Hear it on the radio all the fucking time. And I'm just like, some radio guy heard this and was like, yep, that's what I want people to hear at 4:30 in the afternoon driving home from work. And it's shocking to me. It's great. It's great. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know. It has surprised me. And I don't know if it surprised you. It's your voice.
It still to this day surprises me when I'm driving around right here. I'm like, oh, shit. But you also got to remember at the time, too. You know, it was Canadian rock radio was very safe and very homogenized and very particular, right? So it was, you know, the Tea Parties and the Our Lady Pieces and the, you know, which are fine, like, you know, good bands, and Rain's a great dude, but it was like of that kind of ilk for Canadian bands. Right. And then cue to us fucking weirdos. All of a sudden they're like, we were talking to our friend who was working in radio at the time. And he's like, you just got added to every station in Canada. We're like, what? You know, every rock radio station. But the reason why I think that worked in our favor is because the juxtaposition between us and what was happening around us actually helped us, because we stood out that much more. And I think that was something, and especially a song like Troyana's, when you hear it, it was just like it just jumped out of the speakers at you. You know, it was an undeniable sound. At a time when everything around it was pretty safe, this was something that was not safe, and it was weird, and it was, and I think that it just kind of, everything else around us helped us, you know? Because I just think that people were maybe looking for a little something new. And at that time, not saying, you know, we're reinventing the wheel, but at that time it just seemed to connect with people. Yeah. It was very strange, very, very strange feeling.
It is, but it's incredible, and it continues. And I mean, you know, the new album still has the bangers, the hits, you know, Go Sugar Cannibal Rats is a song I'm hearing on the radio all the time.
Really? That's on the radio?
I think so.
That's great. That's good.
I heard it on 97.7. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. You know what? 97.7. Yeah. They've always been big supporters. And
great guys over there. Paul's a great guy.
Totally. Yeah.
Tell me about the new record, you know, and kind of what went into this newest album.
Well, it was, again, it was a very interesting time for us because of going back to the situation with Aaron. And then, and as much as, you know, Jordan is our pal and we've been friends with him for a long time and, you know, arguably one of the best drummers in this country, I would say. Sure. But it's just even that like working relationship of like, hey, you know, like we've never recorded for, you know, again, almost 23 years at that point, it's always been the four of us. So to have someone else come in was a strange adaptation. And Jordan was amazing and, you know, everyone got along and Aaron was in the studio every day and it was really this beautiful as an awkward thing could be, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so the recording, I mean, this record, I would say, more so than any record, was definitely Ian's baby. You know, like we have our own little studio, and he kind of spent 15 hours a day in there for a year. You know, and cause that's what he loves to do. And he got into production. He's been producing records now, and so this was definitely Ian's kind of his vision. Definitely ran really strong throughout the whole process of it. And I had nothing but the most tremendous amount of respect and appreciation for his vision and dedication and his passion for doing it, you know? So, yeah, it was a really fun record. It was challenging at times. We started recording. I'm a big believer in, aware of seasons. Okay. And I think that, you know, we started recording right in like 2 days after, it was like January 3rd, we started recording. Oh, okay. In the dead of winter. Yeah. In Toronto, and it was fucking freezing and miserable and horrible. And there was just like this constant struggle with the record, you know what I mean? Like there was just always this kind of, this visceral kind of pushing a rock up the mountain, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, like once we kind of got to the mixing and everything, then the weather started improving and the sun started coming out. And it was like this beautiful kind of epiphany of, you know, and this realization that like, okay, yes, you know, and all of that struggle and all of those things, it actually came out beautifully on the record, you know?
Okay, well, definitely you don't want to start when it's warm out and then finish when it's cold out, or the record will just take a total shit.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Definitely do it that way. Yeah.
Well, no, it was really interesting to kind of see, to kind of, you know, and you know what it's like. You've been doing this a long time. It's like, there has to be those moments on records that are really hard and challenging, and
right.
And you might have not see eye to eye, and there's like conversations and, you know, long days and tired nights, and, you know, you're trying to fucking get it right. You just can't get it right, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, then you get it. You're like, yes! You know?
But
like,
I mean,
lyrically, we did it. You know?
Lyrically, did Ian take on more of a role on this record
than on this record? For sure.
Is that like weird for you, or is that something
makes
it harder for you to connect?
No, I mean, Ian and I have always, you know, we've always since, well, I mean, back on the first record, you know, I would say I was, you know, wrote a lot of those songs, and he had parts on and wrote a lot of the songs as well. But, we've developed this relationship now where we sit and we work together, and we've done that since like, you know, what's a good example? Like a song like Nothing to Lose. Like I remember writing all the verses and writing everything. And then he had this chorus lines, and then we just used that for the chorus, you know, because so we've always just really worked well off of each other, bouncing ideas off of each other. And I think every single song, you know, especially in the early years, you know, there was a healthy balance between the two of us. And that was something that was, I think, part of the sound. Because, again, I always think that you're collaborating, you're working with these people, and so you're trying to make the best decisions and make the best idea or present the best ideas for the song. It doesn't matter about the ego or who said what or who did this. It's a matter of, like, in 20 years when you're listening to the song, was that the right decision to put that sentiment there, you know? So yeah, I've never really looked at it as like a slight or a, you know, it's Ian had a ton of beautiful, great, amazing ideas. And I remember even Ian, because he's just such a lovely fucking guy, you know, he's like, you know, we'd be working on a song. He's like, well, I had kind of this up until this point, and, you know, but it's nothing set in stone, and we could try to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I listened to it. I was like, that's fucking beautiful. Like, why would I want to change that
right. Just
to say that I changed it? You know what I mean? Or to like, well, you, I don't know. That's just not how we work. But Ian's also not that, like, he's also the kind of guy that I can be like, I think that this can, you know, let's try doing this. And he's like, yeah, and it will work. And he'll be like, we're going to use that. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a weird collaboration thing that happens, I feel, mm-hmm. too. And I always think when I'm writing, like, let's just talk about lyrics. Let's stick to lyric writing.
Yeah.
When I write a lyric for someone else or something like that, I'm always more conscious of it being, like, where the weaknesses are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that happens when people write things for me, too. And then they've thought about it a lot, because they don't want to give it to me and me be like, what the hell is this? And I'll be like, I see all the holes in it right away that they knew were there. So sometimes, you know, that can happen with collaboration. And the other thing that happens too, sometimes when you sing someone else's words, they can just mean something different to you that you can absolutely really run away with too.
Totally, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. And that's also the thing, and that's kind of a good point. It's like sometimes you need a set of eyes on something, right? Like sometimes you need to be like, well, I think that this is fucking great, and then you give it to somebody, and they're like, it's not, you know, they're like, oh shit, I never saw it right. from that, you know. And that's why I think being in a band is a collaboration with the people in the band, you know. And
sure, of course,
definitely, like, you know, Ian and I have talked and the band's talked, and this record I think is going to be a lot more collaborative because we're all there and we're ready for that as well, you know. Like the last record was definitely Ian's, like I said, Ian's baby, and he had a lot of vision, and he had a lot of, you know, kind of the way he wanted it to. He had a long-term vision for the record,
yes.
You know? And again, you know, I would help and add when I could, but I would also get out of my own way, you know what I mean? To let him, for the greater good of the song, you know?
Absolutely.
But again, so on this record, you know, we've already started talking about like how we're going to approach it and what we're going to do. And, you know, we have an open enough and a beautiful kind of dialogue that it's like, I need to see more me in this record. You know, I have all these great ideas and that I think are great ideas. And so we'll sit and we'll work on them together. You know what I mean? And he'll have ideas as well. And we're going to sit and work on them together, you know? So it's, I'm really excited for the next step, but I'm also very appreciative of the people that I get to be in this band with, because they're just fucking amazing.
Well, you've got a great group, and it's, you know, it's amazing you've done it this long, you know, with the same guys, and you guys have stuck together, and it's like, it just seems like you could never, it just wouldn't work with anyone else, you know? It's just, that's just how it seems. Like, everyone has to be there, and Aaron still has to be there, even if he's not physically playing, you know, just as there as you know, just as a personality, as a collaborator. I mean, it really does make sense, especially me knowing you guys and knowing you guys for so many years. It really just wouldn't work with anybody else. I really agree.
Well, thanks, dude. I appreciate that. And, you know, I think it's also, you know, we're just trying again in this really crazy time and place, that we're living in, and all of the madness that is going around us, and to just be able to still be able to play music with my buds and go around the world and sing some rock songs and hopefully, you know, make people smile and make people feel something for a night is not something that we take lightly, you know. And,
absolutely.
And that's why all of the bands out there, and your band, and all of our buds that are out there fighting, you know, fighting the good fight, is, you know, I'm just proud of everybody, because there's still people that, you know, and I've been having this conversation a lot lately about, you know, is rock finally kind of, you know, is it over? I'm like, no, it's not.
No.
It's a beautiful time, and it's percolating, and the cycle is going to be, you know, I think people are getting, they're just sick of eating food with no nourishment, just because it, you know, it's a lot of, as my dad would say, it's a lot of frosting and no cake, you know what I mean? And I think that, we're finally at a point now where people are starting to come back to live rock shows and that community and that feeling of, you know,
I mean, people want to say rock is dead. Well, maybe this summer they can go to Reading, Leeds, Hurricane, Grass Pop, or Nova Rock. You guys are playing all those ones.
We're doing all those ones. Yeah. But,
you know, as they're probably, I don't know, is Hurricane's got to be like 80,000 or something like that, right? I mean, it's like they're massive festivals.
Yeah.
Does it get old doing those? I mean, it can't possibly get
old.
But you've done them
not.
So many times.
Well, this is actually a really big year for us because we're actually we're headlining Hurricane and Suicide for the first time ever in our lives.
Oh,
which
wow.
For people that don't really know, it's this. It's probably the second biggest festival in Germany that's been going on for like 30 years, and we played it for a long time, and we've clawed our way tooth and nail. And so when we got asked to headline, it was a really big moment for us to be like, yes, it's the hard work paid off. And so,
awesome.
That one's going to be, thanks, dude. Yeah. Well, again, for four idiots from fucking Mississauga to be able to do something like that is not something that we take lightly, but you know, it's, you're right. You know, people, there are outlets for it, and you just got to go find it. And I think that we all have to, anyone that's in a band, regardless of the genre, we have to start supporting each other and encouraging each other and encouraging people to go out and support local venues and support the local band at their high school even, you know, and,
right.
And kind of perpetuate this thing that's given both of us a wonderful life and opportunity to, you know, to do what we want to do. And we got to create that infrastructure for other people to follow that as well.
Amazing. Amazing. Thanks so much, man. I got one last question for you.
Sure. Go ahead.
What was it like playing at the Sky Dome opening for Guns N' Roses?
Well, that was a weird one. Yeah, I mean, it was a...
A weird one. It's awesome. I wanted to go to the show so bad, and I was on tour.
No, it was... I remember we were on tour in Germany, of course, and I was laying in bed, and I was going to watch... I think it was Game of Thrones. I had everything lined up. I was going to just sit and watch Game of Thrones, right, and have a coffee and just, you know, I was just excited to have a day off and be by myself. And I got a call being like, hey, or an email story saying like, hey, GNR wants you to open for them at the Rogers Center in Toronto. I'm like, what? And I started laughing. I was like, yeah, right. You know? And my manager's like, no, I'm being fucking totally serious.
You have to check the calendar to make sure it's not April 1st.
Well, we actually had a show booked for that day somewhere else, but that one kind of got pushed aside.
Yeah.
You don't get that off of it. But you know what was cool? We played, did you guys ever do, it's in Australia, the festival, Summer
Soundwave?
Sonic? Soundwave, that's it.
Sorry, yeah, we did it. Yeah. We did it twice.
Yeah. Okay. So Soundwave, we were doing it, and beside our dressing room was Duff was there with Loaded.
Oh yeah.
Which was like his side project kind of band. And so I'm just standing there, and there's Duff, just Duff McKagan, just sitting there by himself, just like, you know, and I'm like, hey, man. And he's like, hey. And so we ended up getting along really well, and he was a complete and utter gentleman.
I heard he is
such
really
a
nice
fucking
guy.
Sweetheart. Yeah. And then we ended up doing like our own, like a side show kind of thing, like on days off, you go. Yeah. So we were playing in Sydney, and he kind of came up to me. He's like, hey man, is it cool if me and the guitar player come and see the show tonight? I'm like, yeah. Sure, Duff McKagan. So anyway, so he came and hang out in the dressing room before the show, and then stayed at the front of house for the entire show and came hang out afterwards.
Wow.
You know? And so I think that might have had something to do with us getting...
Could be.
Like, it's just so random, right? Like, right. Hey, you want Gina? So anyway, yeah. So all of that being said, and I'm giving a little bit of a backstory, to be able, you know, I'm a huge baseball fan, as you know.
So am I.
And to be able to play... like at the fucking Sky Dome, right, opening for GNR, it was a pretty, and the best part about that too is like, you know, that was a bit of a, it's a bit of a daunting task opening for a band that no one cares about the opening band.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, you are just like, hurry up, kid, get off the fucking stage. I want to see Axl, you know? Yeah. But the crowd was amazing, and they were so kind and so cool. And I think we maybe have won some people over, and it was a beautiful, beautiful day. Yeah,
that's great.
And then getting to sit in the away team dugout and watch GNR was also pretty cool. Drinking beers, yeah.
Not wine? You're a wine guy, I thought.
I am a wine guy, yeah, but you know, when in Rome.
You know, it's funny, I'll tell you a quick story about Soundwave. It just reminded me. So one of the years we did it, Slash was there. Like his solo Slash thing.
Yeah.
So I'm in like the catering line at Soundwave, and I'm a vegetarian, so I asked for like the vegetarian option. So they go and they reach down and they pull out this thing and for me, and all I hear behind me is, "Damn, that looks good." And I turn around and it's Slash, and I'm about to respond, right? With the "Damn, that looks good." But when I realized it was Slash, this is what I said. That's verbatim what I said. And,
yeah,
and all he said was,
"Cool, man."
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
"Are you okay?"
Yeah,
and
I said,
I said, yeah, no, it just looks like a great salad. And then I turned around mortified and, you know, considered slitting my wrists. So
no, but that's also, you know, you got to think about it. When you're kids, you never ever ever thought that, you know, you'd be standing in a line you know, ordering food with like literally a rock and roll icon.
Dude,
you
know, I
like, yeah, like you never, like, that's what I was going back to even like before. Like, you never ever think, you know, that we had no idea. We always dreamt big and we always had big aspirations. But when you're standing and, you know, I still, like, again, huge Pearl Jam fan. And
yeah,
I remember meeting Eddie Vedder and having a big talk to him. And he, him, you know, he wrote me this lovely letter. And you know, and like, I'm standing there and he gives me the hug and I'm like, this is fucking like my idol, you know, like this is someone when I was 15, 16 years old, like I was looking up to this person as like a, you know, and I still look up to him, you know? And yeah, so for him to be like, hey, Ben, you know, like that still just kind of blows my mind that we get to, that's the beautiful thing about music is it can take you places that you never dreamt or you ever believe were possible, you know? And that's why it's important for all of us to keep going and keep doing it.
Wow, dude. Well, that's a great story and inspirational, and it's great to hear you're doing so well, and thanks for taking the time to do this, man.
Dude, thank you, because I remember you asking a long time ago, and I just remember, you know, for some reason or another, it just never really worked out. So thank you for considering me, and thanks for doing it, and thanks for being a voice to a lot of, you know, a lot of great things, especially.
Thank you, man.
Because I know you've done, like, The Flag, and I know you had Tim on from Rise, and it's cool.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, man.
Keeping it alive.
I'm trying.
Well, thank you, brother. Appreciate it. And let me know when you're going to put it up, because I'd love to share it with
a couple weeks. Great. I think I got next week. I have the guy from Dream Theater. So
nice.
Yeah, it was terrific. It's a great episode.
I will listen.
All right, man. Well, thanks again, and go Blue Jays.
Yes, agreed. All right. Thanks, buddy.
Take care. See ya. So there it is with Ben. What a great conversation. Eye-opening. So much cool stuff there. I hope you took so much away from it. Thank you, Ben, for taking the time to do this. And if you are in Europe, make sure you don't miss them headlining all these crazy festivals. Congratulations to them. Wow. Amazing the stuff that Billy Talent has done. It is incredible. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, it's really easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Feel free to add us on all the social media. We're on there, especially Facebook. We got a revamped Facebook page. I don't know if you gave away your personal information or whatever happened, but if you're still on Facebook like I am, check it out. Just give it a search, Lead Singer Syndrome. Also, make sure you check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Again, the link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. Europeans, I will see you in just a couple days. And everybody else, check your calendars, because I'm sure Silverstein will be back in your area on tour very, very soon. I will leave you with a tune. So many great Billy Talent songs to pick, but I'm going to pick the one that started it all. Here is Try Honesty on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
Down naked while I scratch.
All right, I'm going back to watch Luke Maley highlights, but you stick around and listen to this episode of Lead Singer Syndrome with my good friend. How do you say his name? It's like Kowalchuk or something. Can you Google it? K-O-W-A-L?
E-W-I-C-K.
Oh, Kowalowitz. Kowalowitz.
Are you sure?
Kowalowitz. I think it's Kowalowitz. Ben Kowalowitz of Billy Talent.